Okay, let's get started.
Oh, wait, just a minute, partner.
No.
Guess again, freak boy.
To the Batmobile. Let's go.
AudioTU.com. Another fresh picked pod from AudioTU.com. Shutters Inc. with Shelton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode 48 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from AudioTU.com, and with me on the line via Skype from Melbourne once again, Shelton Muller. How are you?
G'day, Bruce. Pretty good as usual. No change.
Slotting back into the doldrums of everyday life again, are we?
Well, it's hardly doldrums. I must admit, it's busy, and I've had the final part of a magazine to put together, and
yep.
Naturally, I've been going through all the images from Argentina, and picking yep. the good ones and sorting them all out. And
picking the good ones. Try picking the bad ones. That'll be quicker.
Bruce.
I'd hate to be trying to pick the eyes out of those photos, man. I think, yeah, they're just awesome.
Thank you very much. And once again, of course, if you haven't had a chance to look at them, you can just simply go to my website and go to the gallery page, and you'll find the Argentina icon. So yep. if that interests you. And now I've just had confirmation this morning from Wild Visions that we are going to run the tour again next year at the same time.
Oh, nice.
So
To Argentina again?
To Argentina again. I just think we have to.
Wow.
It's just such an incredible place to photograph. And
yeah.
I would invite any and all listeners to make some serious inquiries. If you want to travel next year and you also want to be with other photographers, let me know, because it is just such a fabulous place.
Just so, as a reminder, well, mainly for Australian listeners, how much was the tour to do?
The land content is about $49.95 Australian.
Right.
Plus airfares, which I can't really sort of, I think they were around the $2,500 mark, including internals.
So you're looking about $7,000 all up.
Seven and a half, eight-ish for Australian
3 weeks?
Dollars. It was about two and a half.
Okay.
Yeah. And you couldn't go for any longer than that. You'd be exhausted, because
yeah.
what we do in that time is incredible. And if you have a look at the website, the diversity of images there.
Yeah.
is an indication, a small indication of how much fun we had. My job on a tour, I think, is to help people learn as much about different kinds of photography as they possibly can in that short period of time. So we cover everything from landscape to wildlife to, photojournalism and portrait, to social comment, to architecture, and Buenos Aires for architecture, and of course then out in the countries for the, out in the country areas. Oh, it's incredible. So if you want to learn a lot about a lot in a short period of time, this is just an ideal place to do it and have a heck of a lot of fun in the process.
Well, there you go, people. You've got 12 months to save up the pennies.
Yes.
And go along, because I'm envious. I wish I could have gone with you. It looked like a hell of a great time.
Well, you've got 12 months to save up the pennies, Bruce. And
As you know, we were supposed to be going to Mexico this Christmas,
yes.
and it doesn't look like that's going to happen. It looks like we're going to have to bounce it for 12 months. So,
well, that's why people have to go to Shutters Inc. And make a donation, which
absolutely,
help
fund
us with
Bruce's Mexico holiday.
Yes, that's right. That's right, and Argentina, of course.
Just kidding, but, people.
No, fair enough. And of course, we have our Gorilla Pod competition. Just take
absolutely.
Our survey. These are great little accessories to have. I'm actually going to use one for my off-camera flash facility.
Right.
I think possibly more than even my camera. But the little Ricoh I was talking about last week is probably going to sit on there as well. So these are great little accessories, worthy of definitely a few minutes of the survey.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mate, I've had quite an extensive look at the gallery of the Argentina photos now, because as I said last week, at that point I'd only looked at the 30 or so that you sent through on email. And so now I've actually had a look at the whole 106 or whatever you've put up on your site.
Yes.
I had a couple of questions for you. One, how do you decide which of your photos you're going to desaturate, which ones you're going to completely desaturate to black and white,
mm-hmm.
and which ones you're going to either leave as they were or even, accentuate the saturation levels?
Right. A good question, and let's expand upon the whole idea of Photoshop. And I'm not being political here. I'm not being a politician. You know, I'm not going to say, look, before I answer that, let me say this. we're not going to do that. But ever since I began the process of digital, which even happened in my film days, because I bought a scanner and scanned my images. I bought a Nikon Cool Scan,
yep.
And I started at that stage when I could scan my own images. And this is, you know, a few years ago now. I began to think possibly more along the lines of Ansel Adams, but of course I'm not a landscape photographer, nor am I a photographer of his caliber. But Ansel Adams shot with a view to the darkroom. Now, he would compose his landscapes in Yosemite or the San Hernandez Valley or whatever he was, wherever he was, and he would shoot with a view to the darkroom. And it was a transitional and artistic stage for me, because once, when I was shooting film and had no option, I would always create the image in camera. I wasn't a darkroom user. Of course, I've been in the darkroom, but I don't have and haven't wanted a darkroom of my own, and never been a big monochrome shooter. So I shot transparency, and I would create my images in camera. So everything I did was there and then. And the tranny that I got back was the representative, you know, image, having been exposed the way I wanted to expose it, filtered the way I wanted it filtered, composed the way I wanted it composed. And if I wanted black and white, well, I got my other camera out, and either I had it loaded with Agfa Scala, which was the black and white transparency film, or negative film, which was usually the case. So when I started shooting digitally, I started to realize that, there is a secondary part of this process. You know, I don't have to settle for what I see here in the viewfinder. I still believe that you should endeavor to create the image as much as possible in camera for a couple of reasons. It certainly saves a lot of time. The camera is the artistic process that you begin with, so that you should try and get as much done there as possible. And of course, simply the moment you begin editing an image, especially if it's a JPEG and it's 8-bit, you're going to start degrading its quality. So you try and do as much in camera as possible. But now I see through the viewfinder, and this is, I suppose, harkening back to our discussion on my formula, I pre-visualize the image, and I can't really define the criteria for my choices of Photoshop processes. I can't really tell you about every image, but I can give you some principles.
An example, the shot of the little boy walking away from you,
mm-hmm.
which mm-hmm. you've chosen to desaturate to pure black and white.
Yes.
What made you decide to do that? Like, why?
Okay.
You know, were the colors distracting or what?
Mm-hmm. That's a very good question, and in part your own answer. An image, if it's going to be color, I think to some degree it has to need that color, rely on that color to some degree. And if the color detracts from it, then remove the color. Mm-hmm. Also, sometimes a black and white image has a little more impact because the color isn't a distraction, and the subject and the content within the frame is further enhanced by the fact that you're not looking for color. All you're looking at is what's, you know, in the image, what's actually happening within the frame. And there goes my phone.
Yep.
Somebody else will answer that. So that's something that you have to consider. I actually, in that young gaucho image, I realized that the color was actually a distraction, but it wasn't great color either. He was walking into a shadowed area. He himself was dressed in, you know, dark pants, a white shirt, and a little blue hanky around his neck. You know,
right.
So it wasn't necessary to have the color. The black and white made it a little more evocative, and I think highlighted the subject just a little bit further. If it is a color image, is the color a key aspect of it? Is it an important part of the subject? We've often talked about the color of light, and so, for instance, of the images of the gauchos rounding up the cattle. in the early morning light. Well, if I went to black and white with those, even though there's not a lot of color in those images as such, the color that's there is important because it's early morning, it's warm, it's orange, and you get a sense of the feeling with the color. If I took that color away, the image would be, the warmth of it would be completely lost. So there's some things to consider. I think a photojournalistic image can be just as powerful and impactful either way. Why I decide to make it black and white is usually because I don't think the color is necessary, or it is an element of the image that enhances it. And sometimes I just want the subject to be what it is. And you'll notice that in some of the images, I will actually, I have a Photoshop action set up whereby I make a duplicate layer, I desaturate the top layer, and then using the opacity between the layers, I will bring the color image and the black and white image.
So you use a
through.
Quick mask.
And I just make a duplicate image, a duplicate layer, and then in layers, and in layers, just vary the opacity until I've got a half black and white, half color, you know, or sort of a slightly desaturated 1940s style color image. Then I'll flatten the layer and boost the contrast in curves so that it's color, but it's black and white, but it's got a little bit of punch because I've boosted the contrast using a nice little S curve or S shape in the curves box.
Yep.
So that's just something that I a technique that I like to use because it's and I don't know, again, the criteria for choosing that particular technique, but it would be something that the color isn't important, but it is. But I do like the idea of a desaturated and boosted contrast. And there's a few images in there, especially if they've got to have a little bit. If there's a little bit of grunt to the image, you just give it that touch of dirtiness and punch it with a bit of contrast so that you know you get that effect. It's a very difficult question to answer. I must admit, it's part of the pre-visualization process. I know when I'm taking the picture pretty well what I'm going to do with it when I get it home. Sometimes it will just be basic, you know, levels and sharpness and maybe a little bit of saturation to answer the second part of your question. I would only saturate maybe up to, I don't know, 15 or 20. The D200, I choose vivid color mode usually, unless I'm shooting portraits, and then I'll go to the portrait color mode in the camera's menu.
Right.
But on the entire time in Argentina, I just kept it on vivid color, and the images that I get straight out of the camera are nice and saturated. That's the difference between the D200 and the D100, which tended to be undersaturated, and I had an action whereby I constantly had to boost the color in the D100. So there's been a difference in you know my post processing with the D200 as against the D100. Okay. So I haven't had to do a lot of saturation at all, but I will usually sharpen and just maybe, depending on the image, boost in curves just a little bit because I'm used to shooting with transparency, which always had just that nice punchy contrast to it.
Yeah.
But again, if it's a contrasty image to begin with, I won't do that. It may be, for instance, some of the gaucho images in the early morning light were very contrasty, so to boost the contrast in those would just have been wrong and lost a lot of detail in the shadow and the highlight. Yeah. So I didn't do that. But it's really, a lot of the images that you see on the website were pretty well out of the camera apart from just a couple of tiny little tweaks, and they were not tweaks that majorly, you know, altered the content of the image.
Right. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, now you just make me feel worse.
No, don't do that. I was in a great place, a great time, and in the zone.
Yeah.
You, Bruce, and you would have done exactly the same thing. Those who were with me, who are enthusiast photographers, not even professionals, all got fabulous images. And if they didn't, then, it's not because of any other reason other than they just need more experience. And that's why we go on photo tours. That's why we hang around together to learn from one another. The opportunities that are afforded you are such that it's very hard to take a bad photograph. The interesting thing is that when we were all together, we all saw things differently. Some people, and we talked about this with the Antonio issue last week, where, you know, they wanted to take Antonio around the back of the house. And I hope you've all had a look at those images, because you have posted them, haven't you?
Yes, I have. Yep.
Bruce, yes, good. Yep, they have been posted. Have a look at those, because there is a right and wrong way to set up an image. And those images of Antonio are an ideal example of shooting it right and getting it right in camera. Now, this week I'm going to send you and this gets back to your question, Bruce, that we started with. Right. I'm going to send you a photoshopped black and white image of Antonio. Okay. It's going to wind up on the cover of Total Image. And it's this same old man standing in his doorstep, and I love the picture that much. I'm going to send you the JPEG of the result, the image as I saw it pre-visualized and then worked it in Photoshop. What you've got on the website now are the images pretty well as they came out of the camera. Of Antonio in the front of his house and Antonio in the back of his house. What I'm going to do is send you the image as I saw it in my head, in the creative, you know, foggy little creative little nut, you know, almond sized nut in the back of my brain.
The creative swamp that is the Shelton Muller.
The murky marshland that is my creative, except it's nut sized. So you'll see, you know, a classic example of what I'm talking about. I opened up this, you know, your question by saying that the pre-visualization part has now transferred or expanded, rather, from not just creating in the camera, but seeing, even as Ansel Adams did, the process from, you know, shoot from composing and setting up in camera right through to the Photoshop process that is now available to everyone. And by the way, if Photoshop is not available to you, it is an expensive program. I have a legal version. I know there are a lot of what I call RI versions, because what's a pirate's two favorite letters? RI. So a lot of RI versions of Photoshop going around. But if you want to do things legally but you can't afford Photoshop, I would suggest that you have a look at PaintShop Pro. And I'm not allowed to tell you too much, but there's a new version of PaintShop Pro we can talk about next week coming out that is excellent. But here's a program.
So what's that, version 11?
Wow.
Yep.
PaintShop Pro Photo 11.
Gee, it doesn't seem that long ago. You were telling us about 10.
10, yeah. And 11's got some lovely features to it, which I talk about in the upcoming issue of Total Image, which if you don't live in this country, you can download. And if you do live in this country, you can get from participating retailers. And, of course, it's called Better Pictures if you go to Camera House. But I'll be talking about some of the techniques. And I used PaintShop Pro Photo 11 to create the image of Antonio that you will see.
All right.
So this is just an idea of just how fabulous this software is and how versatile it is, and it's not, you know, a $1,200 program like Photoshop. So you can certainly have a look at that. But just getting back to your question, this is the image that I'm going to send you. Is how I saw Antonio when I looked at him through the camera. It's not what I literally saw, but what the back of my brain saw.
Yep.
And so I'm just going to basically, I suppose in principle, answer your question by saying expand your vision in the pre-visualization process when you're shooting, and then take it right through. If you haven't downloaded that podcast or those podcasts about that process, do so, and you'll know what I'm talking about, because that really is, in essence, the answer to your question, I suppose, Bruce. How do you answer a question about, you know, creativity? It's from the heart, and there and you can apply rules, but the rules don't always apply, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I was giving a lecture the other night at Southern Suburbs Camera Club here in Melbourne. And I'd shown these images, from the audience, I was pretty well an hour into my presentation and nearly wrapping up. And a member of the audience, some grumpy old fellow, and I hope he's not listening, but it was a most unappreciated comment at the time. He just stuck his voice into the crowd and said, "That's the first picture you've shown all night that has light in the eyes." I thought, good on you, mate. You know, I've got better things to do with my time than come down here, spend 3 or 4 hours of my time at your camera club and get you publicly criticizing me. It was not a problem in that he had maybe an issue with my images, but, you know, it could have been done a little more tactfully. And, of course, the fact was he was wrong. It was not the first image that had light in the eyes. It was, you know, but I don't, talking about rules, and I'm just spouting here, but talking about rules, he has a rule, and he applies this rule. There must be light in the eyes if you're doing a portrait, because my topic was people photography. I don't agree. If there's, you know, if you don't want light in the eyes, you don't, you know, don't have to have light in the eyes. It depends on what you want to convey. In fact, in the gaucho portraits that you see on my website, I deliberately asked the gaucho to brim, to turn his, to bring his head down, so that the brim of his hat covered his eyes.
Yeah.
I didn't want you looking at his eyes. I wanted you to, you know, get a sense of mystery about this man. So I deliberately had his eyes covered by the brim of his hat. He looks very Charles Bronson, actually, but, you know, the one in the door, the gaucho in the door frame. But that's what I wanted. And so if we do apply rules, we're only going to hinder, you know, there are rules, but if we do apply them every time and think, oh, I've got to do this, oh, I've got to do this, or it's not right, then, you know, we are only going to hinder our photography. So I hope I've answered.
We've been doing it that way for
50 years. That's right, exactly. No, time for a change. Whenever, you know, if you think of music, you know, we would never have the variety of music that we have if people had always applied rules.
That's it.
We'd never have the variety of images that we have if we always apply the same rules. I just see an image in my head, I remember it when it comes up in my thumbs and on the computer, and I say aha, and I break my knuckles and I get to work. And that's really the only answer I can give you. I have a series of actions in Photoshop that, you know, I just click on and away they go, and then I can vary them if I want to, but we can talk about that more in future podcasts if that interests anyone. If you want to know some of the actions that I use in Photoshop, if you want this to become a little more Photoshop oriented, let me know. But for the moment, I think we all really need to concentrate on getting the image right in camera.
Absolutely. Now, this morning, just before we started recording this, I got an email from Richard Bowen, and he had a couple of questions. One, he said, in that same episode, this relates to something he was saying before, I think Shelton said that the aperture on his Ricoh went down to 9, but this was the equivalent of 32 on a DSLR lens. Does this mean that the top end of the aperture was also multiplied, and thus 2.4 is not as fantastic as it sounds?
Richard misunderstood me, and that's fine. I really appreciate your clarifying this, Richard. I wasn't talking about DSLRs, for one. I was talking about the Ricoh, that F9 on this, because the sensor is smaller. F9 has, say, the equivalent depth of field of what F32 might on a DSLR lens. I wasn't speaking mathematically or even precisely, but I was just indicating that because of the size of the sensor, depth of field rules change because of the circles of confusion, which you can, you know, research in your own time. But if you want to talk about circles of confusion, just come to my place. You know, circles of confusion coming around here all the time. But I was speaking in terms of depth of field, and only on a camera, a compact SLR, a compact digital rather, like the Ricoh, the depth of field on a DSLR lens, yes, does change, because again, the sensor is smaller usually, unless you've got, of course, you've got the full frame Canon, full frame being a silly term. But if you've got the if you've got a, you know, 36x24mm sensor like the Canon does, your depth of field remains the same. But if you have a DSLR that has an APS-C size sensor like the D200 and most DSLRs, the depth of field is increased slightly. Yes. The mathematical equivalence of which I'm not going to go into here because I'd have to work them out first, but it does increase. So you get a little more depth of field out of the same aperture, you know, than you would, you know, with a 35mm frame. Please take that in its context, Richard. I wasn't actually either referring to exposure, or I wasn't speaking precisely or mathematically, just in terms of, you know, rough equivalence of depth of field. So the camera doesn't need to have an F32, and if it did have an F32, there'd probably be too much diffraction to actually, and it would actually degrade the image and make it less sharp. So hopefully that
okay.
Now that answers your question.
Do you want to tackle the applied mathematics of the second part of the question?
No. Okay. No, I think we've answered his question.
Okay. And for everyone else listening, the second part of the question I haven't actually read out yet, so don't think that you missed something. It's just that we haven't got to it. So
it was
Richard, Shelton will answer that one via email, matey.
Yes.
But he did have another comment. He said, Shelton, you've regularly argued that we should all be printing our photos. It's not real until it's printed. Mm-hmm. I've also heard you mention this when you're on Ernie Sigley's program. I'd argue a variation. We should all be viewing our photos, and that such viewing might require printing, but it could also be via computer, TV or web page. In my family, we obtain a lot of enjoyment from photos. Blah, blah, blah. It goes on for a while, but he's talking about, you know, they trade photographic DVDs or you know, other forms of digital ways of sharing their photographic content. Seemed like a reasonable point.
And it absolutely is. I would always encourage the sharing of photographs, and of course, I don't believe I've ever spoken otherwise. I think what Richard's doing is the way everybody should be sharing their photographs so that we see them. I believe in printing. I still believe in printing. That's me. I think we're tactile species and we do like to hold prints. I think they're practical and they do have, you know, a longevity about them. But that is, you know, what Richard says at the bottom of his email is, by the way, we have multiple backups of our photos and they are kept in different locations. And second, by the way, we use Apple Macs, and that's fine, that's his personal preference, and you know, they do make it easy. So the first, by the way, is that we have multiple backups and they're kept in different locations. It's just simply smart. Good on you, Richard. That's the way it should be. If you share your photographs with your laptop, you know, using your laptop like you say you do, by uploading and creating web pages, that kind of thing, fabulous, because it just makes our images all the more accessible. I believe that you should be getting some printed. It's not an expensive process. I don't think we should change what we've always done with photos. But the key fact is, the most important thing is, you are backing them up and you are sharing them. At least they're not sitting on your hard drive and no one ever sees them. I say this because, unlike you, Richard, a lot of people just upload their pictures to their hard drive.
Their Flickr site.
Yeah, you know, or, you know, well, no, not even that. They just sit in their hard drive somewhere. Yeah. Nobody ever sees them. They get taken. And that's just wrong. So, yes, a Flickr site or whatever is fine, or create your own website or a blog or whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
That's great. And there are some fabulous programs for creating slideshows in DVD that we've talked about here, and that should be done. I think it's more power to you, Richard. Well done.
Absolutely. Okay, once again, remember to go and hit the audio2.com website, the Shutters Inc. page, and click on the GorillaPod link to the survey, and you can go in the chance to win one of a handful of GorillaPods that we've got to give away. We're going to run this for about 3 weeks or so, and we'll announce these, I think it's about the first weekend in October.
Right.
And fabulous. If you haven't viewed Shelton's Argentina photos yet, then shame on you. Get over to photographybyshelton.com.au and check them out. There's some awesome photos there.
Just .com, mate. No AU.
Oh, sorry.
It's just, that's
sorry.
All right.
Photographybyshelton.com.
And it's Shelton with a T, remember, not Sheldon with a D.
Absolutely. what was the other thing I was going to... Oh, I know what I was going to say. How do people feel about this slightly longer edition of Shutters Inc.? Does anyone have any objections to it? Last week went for about half an hour. This week will be around about the same. I just want to get people's feedback. Do you feel like we're rambling on too much, or are you happy with the slightly longer format of the show?
If you object to my loquacity, be kind.
Of course. We know what a fragile ego it is.
That's right. I'm a photographer.
Sensational. All right, Shelton, thank you very much, mate.
My pleasure. Thanks to everyone again. Thanks to you, Bruce.
We'll talk with you next week.
See you soon.
See ya.
You've been listening to another Fresh Picked Pod from audio2u.com. Audio2u delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable.
You be the boss.
Hear what you want to hear.
When you want to hear it.
Hey, now that's a good idea.
Audio2u.com. Hit us today.
And remember,
Control D to bookmark.
Audio2u.com.